Early Trumbull Industries, A History of the Nichols Area of Trumbull. Written by Sidney P. French. Narrated by John Fruin. Most of the people living in the village until 1830, when the factories began to draw outsiders, were descendants of early settlers. Since the distance from England made it expensive to import clothes, household goods, and other needed articles, the colonists began manufacturing for themselves. Every house had its spinning wheel and loom, and the housewife made the clothes for her family. Cooking was done in large fireplaces. Bread was baked in chimney ovens, where fires were made to heat bricks before the food was put in. The original village tanner and shoemaker was Squire David Seeley, who lived in a house on the site of the David P. Plum House. He carried his kit from house to house, making the family boots and shoes out of leather made of hides furnished by the family. The vats where he tanned hides were by the roadside at Misha Brook. Later, a tannery was built on the south side of Mountain Hill. Mr. Seeley was the first man in the village to take a newspaper, and the neighbors would gather at his house to hear the news. The first sawmill in the locality stood near the dam of Old Sawmill Pond, which was built and owned by Daniel Fairchild before the Revolution. The village chairmaker was John Bentley, whose shop stood near his house opposite what is now Priscilla Place. By 1820, the manufacture of combs was quite an industry, one factory standing in the south yard of the house now owned by Howard Curtis. A man by the name of Knox had a small tin shop just north of the house, now owned by Mr. Lindley, where the village pots and pans were made. The making of saddle trees, one of the larger village industries, had a small beginning. Eben Fairchild, son of Lewis and uncle to Charles Sr., was a cabinet maker and very ingenious. One day, about 1800, he took an old saddle apart and set out to make another like it. It seemed such a good job that he made several more, carrying them across lots to his uncle's blacksmith shop in Isinglass, where ironwork was added. His neighbors made fun of them, but undaunted, he took them by stagecoach to New York City, where he found a ready market. More were made, and finally a factory was built across the road from the present house of Mr. George Woods. This was bought out in 1844 by the Amblers, who built factories on their land on Shelton Road. These prospered and were particularly busy during the Civil War. During good times, they worked 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. The largest industry in the village, the making of coaches and light carriages, was started by the Nichols brothers, George, David, and James, whose plant at one time spread across both sides of what is now Center Street. Their chief market was in the south. This was ruined by the Civil War, but they were able to develop a large trade through a Mr. Stevenson of Australia. The carriages were crated and drawn to New Haven, where they were shipped by water to New York, and there put on boats for Melbourne. This business flourished in the village until the growth of Bridgeport as a manufacturing center compelled it to move there at the end of the 19th century. One of the buildings, a large three-story brick structure, stood until 1915, being used in later years as a blacksmith shop on the ground floor and for plays and entertainments on the upper floors. Another carriage factory was built by Andrew Clark on land just south of the present house of Mr. Edward Nothnagel. This was bought out by the Amblers during the Civil War. The Stickles House, recently torn down for the Merritt Parkway, was originally a pin factory owned by Elam Hawley, who lived in a little brown house in the rear. It was afterward used as a tavern. A four-stall horse shed, built for the use of the inn, was later used on Sundays by the parishioners of Trinity Church across the road. The first store in the village was kept by Robert Nichols, an ancestor of Lucius Nichols. It stood on what is now the property of Lauren Willis. In 1865, the old shop erected by Mr. Pete for a stub joint factory was purchased by Charles Blackman and Samuel Pattison and moved to the corner of Huntington Turnpike and Jerusalem Hill, above Trinity Church, where it was used for a store. They sold out to Mr. Payne, he to Fairchild and Curtis, they to Williams Mead, who traded the property to Munson Evett. Until Mr. Mead was storekeeper in 1882, Anyone going to Bridgeport would bring up the Nichols mail and throw it on the counter for all to look over and take their own. Reverend A.H. Goodenough, recently from England, was at this time pastor of the Methodist Church. He was anxious to have his mail, incoming and outgoing, reach its destination promptly, so he applied to Washington for a post office. A committee to select the name sent in Nichols Farms, Amblersville, and Old Farms. The reply of the government was, quote, "You may call it Nichols if you are of a mind to, but there are too many farms around already," end quote. The mail was carried by Franklin Potter, who ran a stagecoach from Huntington through Nichols to Bridgeport, as long as the post office was in existence. It was discontinued with the advent of rural free delivery in President Theodore Roosevelt's administration. Oliver Plum kept a store for 40 years. He also ran a slaughterhouse to which the farmers brought their cattle and pigs to be butchered, the store keeping a portion of the meat in payment of services. Until recent times, farmers' wives bartered their surplus butter, eggs, and cheese at the stores for groceries and utensils. Candles and sulfur matches were made at home for trading at the stores.